Welcome to Sales and Marketing Talk Show. Today I have Richard Harris joining me, and today we are talking how to earn the right to ask right questions in your sales, which questions you should be asking, and when you should be asking those. So great to have you on the show, Richard. Welcome.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to have this conversation, and don't get to do a lot of the live stuff, so I like it. It's really a lot of fun. Thank you.
Yeah, and I think this is super, super interesting topic. A lot of my listeners have been asking this, like how to get better at asking sales questions. And actually, at the same time, this is a topic that I want to personally be better at as well. So super great to have you on the show. But hey, for people who don't know you yet, can you just give a quick introduction? Like, what do you do?
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. I am a sales trainer, sales coach, and startup advisor, working with organizations at various levels, even some enterprise companies, on teaching their reps how to have better conversations, obviously earn the right to ask questions, working to help other organizations with their sales operations, and also some with go-to-market strategies, whether it's brand new or a go-to-market strategy for an existing organization that's rolling out a new product, feature, or service.
Yeah, great. Thank you for sharing that one. And when I was preparing for this interview, I went your website through, and I found out there that you are talking about this framework called meat selling. And I thought that is a great framework. And today we are going more deeply on that one. And what NEAT stand for, it was Need Economic Access to Authority and Timeline. And we will figure those ones out in the detail. But can you first open up, like, how did you came up with this framework? Because there are like so many different frameworks that you could be using on sales. So
really
why this one?
You know, it came to me in a bar or a pub, however you want to describe it. I've been in the sales training and coaching space for a couple of years and looking for some way to try and differentiate myself. And I was thinking about it, and, you know, I looked at BANT, obviously, you know, I think that's dead. I really do like Anum. I thought that was a really good evolution when it came about. And I do like Medic. Medic's been around a while too. For me, I'm a tactical trainer, so I always want to teach people the exact question to say, based on who their customer is. So in order to do that, we had to drive in a little bit better at, well, you know, defining need, and then what's the economic impact of that need. And I hate the word ROI. A good friend of mine once told me that nobody believes the R, they only see the I. You know, I have people ask me about, you know, well, what's your ROI of hiring you? And I'm like, really? Like, are you really? And I'll call them out on it. I'll say, do you really think you're going to believe the return? Or are you really going to look at the eye? And they all chuckle. And I say, great, well, let's talk about economic impact. Because here's what happens when you do something. What is the opportunity cost associated with doing it one way versus the other? And then because of that opportunity cost, what's not getting done? And what's not getting done, how is that actually affecting your revenue? That's real economic impact. And so you get them to tell the story by asking the right questions. So it just came to me from a way of just trying to figure out something unique and different. And then people gravitated to it and they liked it. Yeah. It can be, I've called it everything. So for some, it's a philosophy. Like if someone's got Medic, I don't want to tell someone to rip out Medic and put in Neat. Like that's silly. If Medic's not working, I guarantee you it's not Medic. It's the fact there's no coaching going on. There's no training. But Neat can bolt on to Medic. Same with Challenger, it can bolt onto these places. So in some cases, it's a philosophy. In some cases, it's a methodology. In some cases, it's a process. And so when I talk to people, I think we try to understand what those things are for them and whether it's how they could best utilize it, right? So I don't necessarily need people to go put it in their CRM. That's up to them and I'll coach them through it. But I'm not seeking to change process or methodology just for the sake of change. I want to change the behaviors of the reps, and Neat allows me to drive towards that.
Yeah, Creates ideas there. You mentioned that Bant is kind of dead, and I think there are a lot of people who might be using it who are like listening us right now. So what do you think? Like, why do you think that people shouldn't be using that one?
Which part? The whole neat concept?
No, Bant concept you mentioned there.
Oh, Bant. Oh, traditionally when Bant was taught, you actually started with budget. You started with what is your budget for this? And if my memory serves correct, it was from IBM, which is, you know, an old school big blue mainframe. And so people liked it, and everybody's, you know, was like, well, nobody gets fired for buying big blue and IBM. And I'm like, well, you should have been, right? Like, that's like, just because of their name, like, come on, really? Like that's lazy selling and lazy buying. So I also think that people don't know how to ask those questions. And if you really think you're going to put a millennial, look, I'm 52, a millennial, or even me, on the phone with someone who's 30, 40 years, 20 years into their career, you really think some 20-year-old is going to know how to ask about budget right off the bat? I talk to sales reps all the time, and they're afraid to talk about budget. They freak out. And for me, it's the most exciting part of the conversation, right? Because then I get to know if something's real.
Yeah. Exactly. But hey, before hopping into the need itself, one thing that you are talking about a lot is like how to earn the right to ask questions and make sure that you are getting people to answer. And I think, for example, one thing that comes to my mind and what I witness all the time through LinkedIn is that, for example, I might get a message from some sales rep on LinkedIn, and like the first question they are asking, like, hey, what is your business goals for this year? And that person, for sure, they don't have the right to ask that question, and I'm most likely not going to answer on that one. So like, how do you get the right to ask a question from a potential client?
Yeah, so there's a couple of pieces there. So first and foremost, I want to say to all the reps out there who have been told to just send the message, it's not your fault, it's your manager's fault. They don't know how to teach you, right? They suck at it, and I'll just call them all out. What it means though is that people buy from those they trust. Trust is more important than likability. If you build trust, they tend to like you, right? Just because someone likes you doesn't mean they trust you, right? It just doesn't work that way. So you have to earn the right. So in a LinkedIn situation, you're earning the right to build trust by, you know, maybe liking or commenting on something they've said. One of my favorite things to do is to tell people, you know, in a connection request, hey, you know, I'd love to connect with you because we're in the same industry. And I teach reps, don't worry, I'm not going to turn around and ask you for a meeting or pitch you. Like, be honest and direct. That's different. People want different, and they want honesty, and they want trust, and they want those pieces. Now, that doesn't mean later you couldn't do it, but you don't do it right then.
Yeah.
Maybe after that you say, hey, I promised I'd never pitch you, but we put this article out. I thought you might like it. If you don't want me to send you stuff like this, I won't. Don't worry. But, you know, like, be honest with people, right? They know what's going on. The flip side of that is to turn around and do the opposite and say, hey, you know what? Yes, I'm asking you to connect. And yes, I'm going to ask you for a meeting to talk about this. What do you think? Like, don't hem and haw. Like, just be direct, honest, and sincere. So that's a LinkedIn approach and strategy. From a sales perspective, right? From a, hey, I've got a first call. I teach something called a respect contract, where you really do maintain control of the first conversation and every other conversation all the way through. And it teaches you to earn the right to ask questions. So it's super easy to just say, you know, look, I've got us down for 30 minutes. Does that still work? And they'll say, yeah, that works great. Any hard stops? No or yes. Whatever their answer is, I say, great. Well, you know what? At 25 minutes, I'm going to call a timeout. And we're just going to see where we are. If we should keep talking, great. And if not, that's okay. And then I'll even tell them, I'll say, look, you know, my goal of this conversation is to understand where you are, what you're looking for, ask you some questions, certainly want to answer your questions, and kind of go from there. And they all agree. Nobody disagrees with that. And then I'll just say, look, if at any point you don't think we're the right fit or I'm not the right person, just say so. You aren't going to offend me. I promise. And likewise, if I can't help you, I'll tell you. I'll even point you in the direction of other sales trainers, right? That's how you and I met, right? Like, that's where you and I said, hey, you should go talk to Niraj. And then I'll even say further, it's like, look, I don't want to send checking in and reaching out emails that you don't want to get and I don't want to send. Is that fair? And they all agree. And then I'll transition to say, great. So aside from what you sent in the comment field, you know, what's driving this conversation? So I'm off to the races, right? I've established respect. I've established rapport. We're now, you know, at an even level. We're on the same playing field. I haven't put my prospect up on a pedestal or really high up above me. And then I've transitioned very specifically with an open-ended question to figure out why we're even here. So this is called a respect contract. And from there, I can ask any question I want. They can ask me any question they want, and we can just go. So that's how you earn the right to ask the questions. So I'm going to pause there because I know I went on a little bit of a diatribe. So thanks for letting me do that.
Great, great ideas and like super actionable tips there. So thank you for sharing those ones. But yeah, now we have the right to ask the question. So then if we hop onto the first part of the need, so the need and like how to like really understand the need of a customer. I think like the main challenge a lot of people are doing here, they kind of think that they know the need, but in reality it might be something else that, or you are not like digging deep enough. So like how to approach this one?
So the first thing I want to say too is you if you ever go look at my site and you see the Neat selling logo, it's a compass, and its purpose is because you don't always start with need, right? As opposed to a BANT or a medic, right? The conversation can start anywhere, and I'm okay with that. Like, I want there to be that level of flexibility for you to know how to navigate the conversation. And it also allows your prospect or customer to have a greater sense of control of where the conversation goes. This goes back to that first question, though, that you asked coming out of the respect contract, right? So for me, it's, hey, what even drove us to here, right? I get emails all the time that says, hey, Richard, I need sales training help for my SDR at AE team. And I'll go, great. But when you said that, what do you mean? Like, what, you know, SDR, like, is that emails and subject lines? Is it how to write good awareness statements and hooks? Like, what does that mean? Same with AEs. Does it mean qualification and discovery? Does it mean negotiate? Like, what do you mean? Because so often our prospects speak in buzzwords that align with our solutions, and we love to just sort of, you know, whack-a-mole problem solve, you know, each little thing. What I want them to do, and the key of the questions in my mind is that to get them to paint their picture of pain. I want them to live in that pain. I want to have them feel it so that then when I talk about how I can help, I'm providing relief. I want to know if they have headaches and migraines. And I want to show if I'm going to be Tylenol or some prescription drug that the doctor needs to recommend because people want pain relief. So they, and the last thing I'll say is people buy pictures, not words. So they come in with these words of like SDR training or AE training. Well, okay, yeah, here's how I do it. But I don't want to do that yet. I want them to paint their picture. And then I can paint the other side of that picture. So again, I'll stop there and make sure I didn't go too far on a tangent for you, because I know you were asking a little bit about need first. So tell me if you want to go back to that.
I think this is a great starting point, and maybe on that one, like, can you open up that one like through example? So, like, what is, for example, in your case, what would be the typical kind of the disease that customer would be having that you are
I
like
mean,
relieving?
look, you know, on an inbound, it's very different, right? So I recognize how I've set this up. This is inbound, and we can shift to outbound in a second. So on an inbound, I need to know why they even reached out to me. Like, aside from what they want to solve, what's happening, right? Like, what's prompting that, hey, you want to talk to me in October versus January of this year? right? Like, what's changed? So now I'm actually talking about timeline, and I'm getting them to paint this picture of my current world, of their current world. So that's where I'm trying to get to, is I'm trying to understand that. And in a healthy way, I want to get in their headspace, not to manipulate them, but I want them to know that I care, that I, like, this is all about showing empathy, which we hear about, right? Not sympathy, but empathy, making sure we understand and seek to understand their world before we try to put them into our world and what we solve.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But you mentioned there that the, like, need itself, it's kind of a compass. So you can, like, start wherever you want, and you can kind of switch the ways that you are moving there. But how you should be, like, deciding where to go first, where to go second? Should it be like where the customer is leading the conversation, or like, how do you determine, like, where you are leading the conversation?
That's a great question. And I do want to come back to outbound in a minute too, because I think we need to distinguish, because I'm talking so much on inbound, which is a lot of my world, you know, fortunately, like, I'm lucky that way. You start based on coming out of the respect contract and based on the reason they actually took the meeting, whether it was inbound or outbound. So looking at that message that you sent that made them finally say, yeah, let's take a meeting. Or looking at the message they sent you on an inbound. One of my first questions is, you know, obviously, respect contract. Okay, what's going on? What got you here? By the way, you mentioned this, or hey, in the email, it seems like you responded to that. Can you help me understand what that is? You know, based on what your response, you know, based on that awareness statement, what was the hook that made them respond? And this is a really, for me, allows them, the prospect or the customer, to have control of the conversation, right? I don't want to waste their time. They don't want to waste mine. I don't mind. Look, I'm a big fan of scripts. I'm a big fan of having a list of 20 questions ready to go, right? All those things. And I should have that based on the companies I'm talking to, the personas, right? The roles that they have. Like, I should have enough intelligence around that. That doesn't mean I'm going to run down the interview checklist. So I need to understand and be prepared, but also go based on where their head is. And that's how I sort of determine where to go, right? Sometimes I'll get emails that say, hey, Richard, you know what? Our team missed our quarterly number. Okay, well, guess what? We're probably going to start at economic impact a little sooner, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes I get the, you know, sometimes someone will say, oh, my boss told me to do this. Okay, that's access to authority.
Yeah.
Like, we should, it should not surprise anybody at all, ever, anymore, that everything is a consensus buy. Nobody's making this decision in a vacuum. So it's not about the person you're talking to. It's about the person you're talking to and what level of access do they have to the different authority figures. Because they're going to be a financial one. There could be a security person, depending on how big you sell. There could be tech. There could be the end user, there could be the end user's boss. Like, it just depends, right? So, you know, you just have to navigate based on what they're telling you, where to start the conversation, right? So anyway, I'll pause there again, because I know I can talk for a long time.
Yeah, great. Thank you for sharing those. And you mentioned there that, like, in some of the questions and, like, how you should be running the sales meeting, it depends a lot on, like, did it come through inbound or was it, like, outbound sales case? But do you, for example, think that, like, understanding the why, because, for example, if it's come through inbound, you can kind of ask, like, why did you decide to contact? Why did you decide to have this meeting? But can you ask the same question if you have booked the meeting through outbound? Like, why did you agree on this meeting?
Yeah, and I'm, you know, and this could be a you know, a language thing, you know, based on sort of American culture and your European culture. So, you know, if you haven't read Chris Voss's book, Never Split the Difference, I encourage everybody to read it. One of the things he talks about is that why can often be a dangerous question.
Yeah.
Because it's forcing someone to defend themselves. Well, why are you talking to me now? Now, you can shift that to a different open-ended question to, hey, what's happened that got you here? Now I'm not even talking about them as a person or that they have to defend. Now I'm talking about some inanimate thing that occurred or that they're anticipating will occur, which is why they actually want to talk to me. So I'm just very conscious on the word, why do you want to talk to me? Now I'm unintentionally forcing them to defend themselves. And I don't want to do that, particularly early on in a respect contract. Like, I don't want to come out of my respect contract and say, so why are we talking today? Right now, all of a sudden, they've got to, start to defend themselves. Granted, once they take the meeting, it'll be okay. I just think you want to warm them up a little bit before you get that direct. And you can change those questions around, right? There's about eight open-ended questions: who, what, when, where, how, why, and which. I think that's seven, actually. That's it. So you can always shift a why question. So I just wanted to pause on that and coach some folks on that one.
Great idea. And yeah, Chris Waugh's book is great. I haven't read it, but I've been listening to that one, but I think it was 3 years ago. So I think time to recap on that one, because
It's a
it was a
great book
great
to
book.
read. Yeah, it's a really good one. It's fun.
It is. But yeah, then like if we think about the like economic side, I think as we discussed earlier, that still a lot of companies are using BANT, and B stands for budget. But like, can you open up what is the biggest difference between kind of a budget and the economics idea that you are talking
Yeah,
here?
no, it's a great question. So one of the things is just conceptually, as soon as you start talking about the word budget, your prospects and customers get really closed up. They've been trained and conditioned to talk about it. And if we've done a good job to uncover the need and then through the right kinds of questions, determine the economic impact. How much is it costing you now? Is what we're talking about going to be better? How much better? What's the result of that better going to mean for you and your organization? Really digging into these stories, you're now driving to real economic impact. So for me, the simplest example is, I want to know someone's average sales cycle and I want to know their average ARR. So even when someone comes to me and says, look, we're a small business, we sell to small business, and our ARR is $6,000 a year. Well, that's not a lot in some cases, particularly if you look at the cost of a training or a platform. But then I turn around and I say, well, great, what's the lifetime value of your customer? And in a SaaS world, it should be at least 3 years. So if it's 3 years, then the value of that customer is $18,000, right? And if I'm coming in to coach a team of 10, I'm not trying to help them get one or two deals to pay my cost. If that happens, I suck. I'm a terrible trainer. My job is to take those 10 people and help them all get five or six or seven more deals a year or a month or whatever their sales cycle is. And when you compare that to the LTV, that's real economic impact. So that's one way to sort of how do you drive to that is looking at those pieces. On the commercial side, right? One of the things I teach reps to do around economics and budget, as soon as anyone talks about the word budget, that usually the prospect or pricing, either of those two words, my immediate response is to say, great, let's talk about commercial terms. Because the phrase commercial terms means there's an exchange of goods and services for money. Budget in some Excel, cell of, AB4 on the columns and spreadsheet, right? And so that's the first thing. So I want to shift the mindset. The second thing is when they ask the pricing, and I'll go into this one unless you want me to stop, but as soon as someone asks me the pricing, you give it and you give it straight. And you don't say, well, it depends. You just say, look, the cost of our services is $20,000 a year. How does that feel? Because pricing is a feeling and an emotion, always, right? If you go to the grocery store and they got all the candy bars and bubble gum right by the register, because it's an emotion, that's what they mean by impulse buy. It's an emotion. Ooh, I want that. I really want that. I'm feeling like I need a Snickers bar or a chocolate bar or whatever. And so that's what you do. The whole theory of Well, just give them the price and shut up and wait for their answer. It's the worst piece of advice. That's not how you negotiate. So, I'm going to pause there and see if I missed something or part of your question, or see if you want to take it somewhere else.
Yeah, maybe one add-on question. You earlier mentioned that like ROI is something that you are not talking that much, and then now we explain the economic side. For example, like what is the customer lifetime value and how many new customer you might be getting. For me, it sounds like those are actually quite the same. So can you explain like what is the exact difference of those two in your case?
Of ROI and economic impact? Yeah, nothing. It's psychological. It's that we've been conditioned to not believe ROI. Look, Steve Jobs could resurrect himself and come up with the greatest ROI algorithm. And I guarantee you there's a lot of people who are going to disagree with it or think it's not right. So part of it is a mind shift and getting them to think about the same thing in a different way. Not in a manipulative way. I don't want people to feel manipulated or try to manipulate people. I want them to get out of their own way because they've been conditioned to do it a certain way for so long. I run into this, you know, as I work with larger organizations, I run into it in procurement. And, you know, because they're like, well, we just have this budget. I'm like, your procurement, like, procurement doesn't set my price, the market sets my price. Right? Like, that's the key. You know, you want a discount? Great. There are three ways you can get a discount. You can get a discount by letting me use your logo. You can get a discount by giving me a customer quote, and you can get a discount by promoting something on social media. Right? That's what I want. Because if I'm going to discount you, I need to make up that discount somewhere, somehow. So economic impact and ROI, very similar. However, they have a different feeling around them. And when you talk about economic impact and you're training reps how to do it and get there, there's a specific, you know, coaching framework and questioning framework I teach. It just makes it easier, right? Like, people cringe when they hear the word budget and ROI. So let's not make them cringe. Let's get them to relax.
Exactly. What do you think on term investment?
I'm sorry, say that again.
What do you think about like if salesperson is talking about not about budget but for investment? Because people are thinking like if you invest on something, it will probably get some kind of return for you. So what do you think on that
I just
term?
don't think people believe it. I just don't think your customer believes it when you use that word. Now, I'll absolutely look, if these words work for you, if you're closing deals using ROI and investment, I wouldn't change just because you listen to this guy named Richard Harris. Like, if it's working, don't change something. Like, that's silly. It's kind of like why you shouldn't rip and replace. There are times you could try something new, and I can talk about that, but I just don't think people believe those words. Again, I'll also acknowledge that, because I talk to people all over the world, that sometimes culture requires you to use certain phrases. Like, I get it. Like, I don't want to sit here. You know, I know I sound American. I know I sound aggressive. I know that's not how it works everywhere. That being said, I've taught it everywhere. I've used it everywhere. I've had people say it's not going to work. And I say, great, let's have a sales call. And I run the call and it works. So some of it is a style and what is someone's comfort level. So if it's working, keep doing it. If it's not working, think about it. So.
I think that's a great advice. But hey, then thirdly, even though not in particular order, but then the access to authority. And I think this is something that a lot of salespeople are struggling with, and someone might be asking like, who is making the decision in your organization on this investment, but how you should be identifying this one? What is the best way to do this?
Yeah, so look, I don't care if it's the CEO. Rarely is that CEO even make a decision by themselves because they're making a decision that's going to affect other people. So he wants their opinion. Right. Now, how I change that is that I don't really ask people, and I don't coach people to say, well, who makes this decision? I want to ask them questions like, Who's affected by this decision? Because a lot of people are affected. And then you can kind of figure out a little bit more about where you may need to navigate the conversation. Right. You know, one of the biggest things that happens, and I think a lot of salespeople run into this, is they say, well, this is great. I need to take it back to my team for an internal conversation. And again, a bad piece of advice is, well, great. Can I be a part of that conversation? That's not what you need to do. Because what's going on in your head, you'll understand as soon as I say this. My suggestion is to turn around and go, so just out of curiosity, as you take this back for an internal conversation, who's going to be the grumpy Gus or the negative Nancy? Who's the one who always says no to stuff?
Yeah.
And they're going to tell me. Again, another tactic is, and this is my favorite one, to say, okay, so you're going to take this to your team. Well, here's the deal. You know, if you take this to your team, I assume all eyes are on you around making this decision. And the customer or prospect's going to say, yeah, they are. I'm going to say, like, okay, great. I want you to know that I'm not going to do anything to make you look bad in front of your peers. I want to make sure that when you go talk to them, that you have the right answers for those folks. So as you think about that, and they always say, wow, thank you, because nobody ever says this to them.
Yeah.
And then say, so as you think about the different people on that committee, what kind of things are important to each of those people so I can make sure you have that? Sometimes they'll answer the question, sometimes they won't. What matters most, though, in this scenario, when you say these things, is that they end up trusting you more, which then means you get shortlisted at the competition level, if assuming they're looking at other people, which they always are. So anyway, so that's sort of how I look at trying to navigate access to authority and understanding it and sort of recognizing it for what it really is, which is just a buying committee. So.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I think I need to be listening to this episode after this one, and I think that is a point where I want to be taking notes as well. So thank you for sharing that one. You mentioned there that, like, every now and then you might be asking, like, who is the grumpy Nancy on the team, but like when you figure that one out, and you, like, somehow, for example, understand, like, what are the reasonings of that one, are you, like, somehow making a contact with that person, or are you basically helping the person you are talking to take care of that one, or how do you work on that?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. So oftentimes I'll say, great, what kind of things are their concerns? What are their concerns, generally speaking, right? What are the things that helps that person feel more comfortable? So that they can tell me who this person is, because they know this person. I don't, right?
Yeah.
So it's important that I work towards giving them the support they need as they go forward. And again, you know, I want to pepper in phrases like, look, I don't want to make you look bad in front of them. I don't want you to waste their time. So, you know, is there anything as you think about these people, you know, what kind of things do they need to help them? And then this is the other piece around access to authority, is to turn around and go, great. So, you know, you've got grumpy Gus over there. What happens if you say yes and they say no? What happens next?
Yeah.
Because that's kind of what you need to know, right? Who's going to say yes and who's going to say no? And based on the people who say no, what happens after that? And that's understanding their decision-making process as much as it is winning the deal.
Yeah.
But I hope I answered that question. I know I can sort of rant.
Yeah, you did. And I really enjoyed those questions, because now I'm, for example, thinking like how I would be answering those questions, for example, if I would be buying something for our sales team or our company. So great. Great ideas there for sure.
Thank you.
But hey, Then about the timeline, and I think this is like important for salespeople to understand, like when the deals are closing, but at the same time, like when customers kind of need the solution for their pain and so on. But like how to identify this one?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And there's a couple of different ways that I work through this. I'm going to contradict myself a little bit. At some point in the conversation, usually not right after the respect contract, but I might say to someone, you know, why do you want to talk about sales training now in October versus January? Right? Now you can change that to, well, what makes you want to talk about it now versus January? Right? And that starts the timeline conversation. So often we're coached to, well, define the compelling event, find their compelling event. Well, it's like, well, wait a minute. Before the compelling event, I need to know what happened. Maybe the compelling event just happened. Maybe it's like, crud, we just missed our numbers for the second quarter in a row. Maybe that was the compelling event, right?
Yeah.
Now the question becomes, when do you need to have this executed, right? How soon do you want to see results? Right? What kind of results define good? So it's a multi-layer of questions around timeline. If you have a compelling event, right? Because look, we also know that no decision is a decision, right? Status quo, we can't afford it, whatever, right? To say, well, what happens if you don't make this decision by then? Right? What happens if, even if they don't have a timeline, what happens if you don't make this decision by the end of December? What happens? If you don't make a decision to implement training, what happens, you know, come Q1? What's going to get better, right? So these are all very direct questions. Keep in mind, I just sort of want to circle back. If you've done a respect contract and you've asked some general level of questions and you built that trust factor, these questions aren't as harsh. And granted, I know I'm sort of in a American attitude zone at the moment, so I wouldn't necessarily say it the way Richard's saying it with my tone of voice. I want people to be authentic to themselves, right? Like I want you to find the way that sounds like you, Richard. So
yeah, exactly.
But those are the kinds of questions. I mean, the most important question is what happens if you don't meet this deadline? But you may want to work your way to that question through a couple of other questions.
Yeah, exactly. But I think, like, for example, asking timeline, it is easier when you are getting the lead through inbound. So you can really ask the question like, hey, why you decided to contact us now and not in 2 months? Or why didn't you contact us like 1 month ago? Why now? But how about when you have got the meeting through outbound?
Yeah, so I it's a great question. And I'm glad you brought it up because it's almost the same thing. There's some subtle difference. Right. So it does sort of come from that respect contract. Hey, what made you want to take this call? What's going on in your world? Right. And they may come back with answers of, I don't know, we're setting up budget for next year, or we're just exploring options, or hey, this is kind of compelling, or I don't know what that means. And sometimes they'll even say, because your SDR just hammered me so much, I finally had to say yes. Right. Like these are all the answers that you're going to get. And it's like, well, great. Well, let's talk about what you're trying to accomplish. So for me, most of the time I'm focusing on need and economic impact before timeline. Yeah. However, when I ask that question of, hey, what made you want to have this conversation today out of a respect contract? They may say, well, actually we just missed goals, or actually there's this big trade show coming up and we need to have our team prepared. Or so sometimes they'll shift it to timeline pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So if you don't know, if they don't know, and particularly it's outbound, right? Like, you know, and they're like, well, you know, it's exploratory, Richard. I don't know anything about you. And I was just thinking about it. It's like, well, great. So is there anything on the calendar that would drive this decision from your side? Not me, right? I want it to be all about them. And they'll say yes or no, or maybe, you know, maybe we're looking at Q1. Then the next piece is, great, what are the next steps? Timeline is almost always about the next step, not the end result.
Yeah.
And that's a really critical piece. And they'll say, I don't know, you know, I need to think it over, you know, I'll get back to you. And I will turn around and I'll say, great. Hey, if I don't hear from you by next Friday, can I email you, or do you really want me to just wait to hear back from you? Because again, that's as a salesperson what I want to know. And I've earned the right to ask that question through all these other things we've been talking about, right? And you'd be surprised how many people say, yeah, if you don't hear from me, email me. Now, that doesn't mean they're going to respond, but at least at night, I can go to bed going, all right, at least I know to email this person. Or hey, when they don't respond, I can still keep calling and emailing or LinkedIning them because they told me I could, which releases all that anxiety we have of, oh my God, I emailed them yesterday. It was Monday at 3:30 in the afternoon. It's Tuesday at 10 a.m. on October 28th. I don't know. Did I leave enough time? Did I give them enough time to respond? Like, this is what we do in our heads. We get so freaked out. We're the most paranoid people in the organization in sales. So, and we always expect the worst. So my goal is, my hope is that people better, when salespeople get better, for me, I want that to mean that they have a little less anxiety about what they're doing. It's not going to take it away. You still hit your number, you got to hit your goal, but I'm hoping the things that I teach help them, yes, get better, but also reduce that anxiety at the end of the day, just a bit. I want someone to be able to go to to your boss and go, hey, look, I know you want me to hound them. They told me I could email them, and I've emailed them twice. So what do you want me to do, Mr. or Mrs. Manager? Because I'll do it. You just tell me. And then the manager's like, I don't know what I should do. Figure it out. Go call them. It's like, really? That's your advice? Get out of here. Like, that's terrible management.
Great. But hey, there's been super many actionable tips here already. But one thing that I want to ask you, like, are there some like all-time favorite questions in sales that you like can be like plug and play? You can just give these five questions to any sales rep and they will be way much better after those ones.
My favorite question. My favorite question is when we talk about pricing and I say, so, price is $20,000. How does that feel? Because seeing their reaction or Zoom or hearing their pause means they've never heard that question and they're actually responding emotionally. And I get honest answers. That's my favorite question. The answers I get are, oh, wow, that's way out of our budget. Guess what? I want to know that. I don't want to waste my time with these people if I'm that far out of the budget. By the way, for those listening, my price is not $20,000. So that's a really good one. Other times they'll say, oh, that's in line. Other times they'll say, actually, we haven't started our budget process, so I don't know yet. Or they'll say, hey, Richard, you're the first person I've spoken to, so I don't know how that feels. Well, guess what? That's a great answer. Oh, who else are you going to talk to? Right now I know, right? Like now I can, they just opened the door. So their answer to that question is so revealing and telling. And it takes a while to get comfortable to just say, here's our price. How does that feel? Because as reps, we want to talk over ourselves because we're uncomfortable talking about price. So for me, it's my favorite, all-time favorite question is, how does that feel?
That's a great question, and it's a scary one because now I'm thinking like I'm in a sales meeting and I should be asking that one. And for some reason, it sounds like a super scary question to ask. Like, how do you
It
feel?
feels that way. Look, believe me, I do, and I've been teaching it for several years now, and I do it with my clients, and it still makes my stomach jump, but it's turned more from scared into excitement because I know the response is there. Like I get excited, like, oh, I wonder what this is. I'm kind of nervous to hear their answer, but in all honesty, their answer to that question is so telling because they'll tell you that it's out of their budget. They don't know how not to answer the question. That's why it works. If I say, here's my pricing is $20,000, does that fit in your budget? Guess what? Now it's all about their budget. It's not about my value. Right? So that's how that works. So
And I think there is like super big difference, like how does that feel? And like then, for example, like kind of similar way to ask that question, but then not the similar way, like
There is no better way than to say, because it's a feeling, right? Like, here's how I'll describe it too. If you've ever gone to the clothing store or Amazon at this point, right, and you bought something and you didn't try it on, and it comes home and you try it on and you don't like it, it's not that you don't like it, it's that you don't like how you feel in it. It's not how, it's not that you don't like how it looks, it's like it's a feeling of how it makes you look. So I want to caveat this, or I want to just remind people about this one question is, I don't want people to say, here's our price, how does that look? Pricing is
Or
not a look, right?
round.
Or here's our pricing, how does that sound? Pricing is not a sound. It's an emotion, it's a feeling. We every dollar, every penny, every euro, everything we spend has an emotional attachment of value. And I need to know their emotional attachment of that value of the dollar versus the value of what I provide.
That's a great one. I will be testing that one, even though it's scary, but I will be testing that one for sure.
Yeah, it's okay. But you gotta, here's the deal. You gotta try it like 10 times. Like, and here's what I want to tell you. Nobody's going to go, what a stupid question. Why would you ask me that? And if they do you really want to work with someone like that? But I can tell you, in all the years I've been teaching it and all the years I use it, because I use it on every sales call, never has anybody gotten angry at me about that question. Not once.
Great. But hey, then lastly, in all of the episodes, I always have a question from my previous guest to you, and then you have the chance to ask a question from my next guest. And on the last episode, I actually have someone you know probably. I had Udi Ledergor, CMO of Gong, and I heard that you've been working together as well. And Udi's
Yeah, Udi's a
question.
great guy. I love Udi. Udi, come on, buddy. If you're listening to this, like, here's the deal, Udi. Come up with a tougher question. Come on, this one's easy. No, I know Udi very well. I know the Gong team, and I love Gong and what they've done for the sales community. They're awesome. So I can't support them enough. They've supported me on my Surf and Sales event and all kinds of stuff. So, to answer your question,
But
what's a
first,
great
the
lead?
question. So people who are only listening and not seeing the
Oh yeah,
video.
sorry. Go ahead.
So the question, what are some good landmine questions to overcome an objection?
Yep. Well, that how does it feel is a great landmine, because we already know they're going to tell me pricing is too hard, right? Oh, the pricing, in some cases. That's a great landmine question. The other piece is, so this is why I think, I'm going to say, I may have to snip this and send it to Udi. You don't overcome objections. You don't handle objections. You marinate in them. When someone says, hey, that's out of our budget. Oh, great. Well, help me understand what that means for you. I want to spend time talking about their world in that objection. When they say, oh, we think we're going to go with the competition. Great. What do you like about that? What don't you like about it? How important is this versus that? This is another great one too. This is a really fun one. Is when they sort of bring up the objection of, well, can your product do this or your service do this compared to your competitor? Rule one, answer honestly. If you can't, you just simply say, hey, Udi, no, you know what? We can't do that. But Udi, help me understand something. How important is that one feature to you making this decision? Because that one thing may or may not be the make or break it. But as salespeople, because of the way we've been conditioned and trained to handle objections and have a battle card about competitors, we're missing the opportunity to understand the most important thing, which is how important is that to them? So almost any objection, you could say that. Almost any objection. They could say, we need, I'm trying to think what are the other ones. There's competition, there's pricing, there's urgency or timeline, right? Like there's all kinds of things. So, so marinate in the objection, don't handle it. So that's my answer for Udi.
Yeah, great answer. And then lastly, on my next episode, I'm talking with Mike Adams. And with Mike, we are discussing how to use stories in sales. So what do you think? What I should be asking from Mike?
Hold on one second. I'm going to go pull him up on LinkedIn because I want to ask him a tough one. Like, give me a second.
Yeah.
Mike, what's his last name?
Mike Adams.
I'm sorry, his last name?
Adams,
Adams.
Adams.
And where's he at? What is his? I don't know that I know Mike. That's why I'm asking. Oh, story. All right, there he is. Story power telling. Okay. Think my question for him is, I'm gonna ask him something about Tasmania, but I don't want to do that. That's where he went to school, it looks like. I would say, how do you get someone to tell the story to you first versus you telling them the story they need to hear? That's my question. How do you get your prospects or customers to tell their story before you offer your solution?
That's a great question. I will be asking that one from Mike on my next episode. But hey, super big thanks for joining this session, Richard. Big thanks for all who was watching or listening to this one. And make sure that you will try out the question that Richard shared here with us. And I will be doing that one as well. And have a great week, everyone. And bye-bye.
Thanks, everybody. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on. It's been fun.
This was Sales and Marketing Talk Show, and I'm your host, Samuli Salonen. Thank you so much for listening, and see you in the next episode.